The Trump administration has made no secret of the fact that it wants to increase our nation's production of oil and gas, and it's made many policy moves to make that happen. One of them is to open up bidding for oil and gas companies on federal lands in northern Arizona. It's a move that, while it's in its early stages, is raising concerns among many environmentalists, as well as many on the Navajo Nation. The Center for Biological Diversity is calling it a move that, quote, threatens wildlife and public health. And Paul Hurt, a sustainability professor at Arizona State University, agrees. I sat down with him recently to talk more about this, and we were joined by Edward D. He's a doctoral student at ASU in sustainability and executive director for Navajo government development for the Navajo Nation. According to Hurt, this fits into the Trump administration's larger vision for oil and gas production in this country, even at a time when there's not much demand for it.
This particular proposal is to fast-track oil and gas leases. So they're selling leases for private companies to develop oil and gas beneath the surface of the land, which the federal government owns. These are called subsurface mineral rights, and the federal government owns and manages who has the right to develop that. Now, normally, when you're in a situation where a oil and gas lease is going to be offered up for sale, there's a regular environmental review, a social and economic and environmental review that takes place, and the public has the ability to be involved. Mm-hmm. And you go through a deliberative process of making sure that this is the highest and best use of these lands, and that if development does take place, that social and environmental concerns are adequately addressed.
But that's not happening in this case?
That is not happening in this case. There was a directive in January from the Trump administration telling the BLM basically that you must approve these without going back and doing any additional environmental assessment, and without even notifying the local people living in the local area and giving them a chance to comment.
All right, and we'll get into sort of the results of that in a minute. But do we know exactly where this land is?
Yeah, it's scattered about. This is mostly Bureau of Land Management lands, BLM lands. Mm-hmm. And one of the most concerning parcels is in northern Arizona, and it's up near the town of Holbrook off of Interstate 40. It's also just a little bit south of the boundary to the Navajo Reservation. And it's right on some of these parcels. A couple of thousand acres of these parcels are directly adjacent to the Little Colorado River, which flows north through the Navajo Nation and into the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. And so any pollution that might result from fracking along the Colorado River is going to impact a lot of people and a lot of water supply.
So they're auctioning off this land in September, right? But is there a demand for oil and gas for fracking in this part of the country? I mean, there's sort of a glut of this right now, right?
Yeah, not really. There's not very much recognized oil and gas development potential in Arizona, so a lot of people are surprised about this. And of course, there is a glut of gas. Gas prices are historically low.
Okay, so that's the situation now. Let's talk about what the results of this could be. So if this does happen, what environmental concerns would you have, Edward?
So the immediate environmental concern would obviously come from the tribes in the area, Hopi and Navajo being two key tribes. But i.e. culturally, I think that's really the significant impact is the cultural impact. Mind you, that's traditional land to the Navajos and Hopis along that I-40 corridor before the boundaries were set in place. That's significant because we have Navajo families that still maintain homes along that track right there, mm-hmm. I-40. Just east of, for an example, just east of Holbrook, there's Navajo homes and hogans and dwellings. And, of course, anytime you find an area like that, you obviously are going to find sacred sites and burial sites that Navajos have rights to, and Navajos basically don't want disturbed. So that's basically the biggest key is the cultural piece of it.
So were the tribes consulted in this at all?
That's also another key area. So prior form and consent wasn't there. So that's also missing again in this area with the chapters and a lot of local communities along the Holbrook-Winslow corridor. So it's just typical when you deal with federal agencies. So that's been a problem. That's an ongoing conversation and discussion that I know that's taking place with Navajo.
Yeah. So I know that some of the members of the Navajo Nation are speaking out against this, not only because of that, but because of the cultural concerns, like you said. I wonder what exactly their recourse could be. Is this going to be the next kind of Standing Rock situation where you're going to see a lot of people out and protesting? Or are there sort of channels that you can go through within the government to try to say we need to be consulted?
I don't have a crystal ball to look into if this would be the next Standing Rock, but I think Navajo, in this case, would probably take their cause or their claim through the courts.
Okay. Paul, I want to talk a little bit also about sort of the larger environmental concerns about fracking in general. What have we seen happen in other communities where fracking has come in?
Yes, it's a very controversial issue in many, many areas where a lot of fracking has taken place. You get significant groundwater pollution. They send highly pressurized, chemical-filled liquids into drilled holes deep underground in geologic formations, and they crack those formations to hopefully release some of that gas and then try to bring the gas out from those drill holes. And those go through water tables. And there's an effort to try to, you know, make those drill holes a little bit impermeable when they're going through a water table. But lots of oil and gas is getting into drinking water tables. Mm. I mean, a great deal of the water that we depend on in the American West, in the arid West in particular, is coming from groundwater. And there are many instances of groundwater pollution from fracking, as well as, you know, minor earthquakes. And so it's very controversial. And we don't want to move forward on something like this without paying very close attention to the kinds of social environmental impacts that can come from it.
So I want to talk a little bit also about the history behind this. Like you said, Edward, this is not the first time the federal government has done something like this. How does this feel, I guess, in the Native American community right now?
Well, with this particular administration, yes, it is the case, albeit President Trump has only been in office for, what, going on a year and a half or so, but it's just one thing after another. You know, there's been report here recently that all federal tribes are going to take a massive cut across the board, whether you're talking about Department of Education, IHS, or EPA, and many federal programs that we depend on based on the treaty relationship with the federal government. So this is basically a terrible situation where Navajo, again, and like with many other tribes, are going to suffer at the hands of this administration, because this is something that's been perpetual, and it's something that we don't see ending. And it's just the best remedy here is the courts.
Yeah. When we look at this from a broader perspective, after Standing Rock, after the Animas River, is this sort of like, I guess, a sensitive topic? Like, is this something like when you're talking about polluting groundwater near a reservation now? Is that even scarier to people after those things have happened?
It is much scarier because, look, for an example, I want to turn our attention to the Bears Ear situation. Look exactly what the Trump administration has undermined it, years and years of negotiation to put that in place with the previous administration. And all of a sudden, just by a stroke of a pen, he basically reduces the Bears Ears with thousands of acres. And that's the same situation. I mean, he's completely undermining the sacred sites, and never mind the fact that, hey, look, I'm going to pollute your water system. So it is an incursion on both the cultural, religious, sacred, and way of life aspect. And it's something that really deeply infringes on communities.
It's a familiar story, too, in the long history of our attempt in America to try to balance economic development with protection of the environment and the health of the public. And we sort of go back and forth where we lean more towards providing safeguards and protections for our personal health and for the health and stability of the environment. And then, you know, a new administration will come in or a new Congress will be elected, and they lean in the other direction and try to provide fast-track authority for economic development. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time we do this, we learn a little bit more and we fine-tune a little bit more. But many of these environmental laws that we have in place were put in place after major disasters, when there wasn't adequate regulation or consideration of social environmental effects. And this is that continuous dance between, you know, to what extent do we unfetter the private sector mm-hmm. to develop without oversight and regulation, and to what extent do we put in protections for the environment and for us?
Right. That was something I was going to ask, is there is an economic argument to be made here, which is, I'm sure, what the Trump administration will argue, that they should be able to develop this land that is Bureau of Land Management land. So do you think that right now we are in the other swing of that, where it's a little bit on that side of the issue as opposed to the other side of the spectrum where we've been, where we're more cognizant of protecting our environment?
Well, very clearly. I mean, the Trump administration has loudly announced its intention to increase oil and gas development in the United States, oddly, at a time when we're producing more than we've ever produced before, and when prices, especially for natural gas, are so low. So mm-hmm. what's odd doubly about that is that if we were really looking at trying to promote good, sustainable jobs, We would be looking at renewable energy development, not getting more oil and gas from dangerous fracking practices out of the ground at a time when we already have a glut of it. It's just nonsensical policy.
All right. That is Edward Dee, a doctoral student at ASU in sustainability. He's also the executive director for the Navajo Government Development in Window Rock. And that's Paul Hurt, a professor of history and sustainability at ASU. Thank you both for coming in.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here, Lauren.